Today we're going to begin our new cycle of learning Chumash, specifically expanding and deepening our learning of Chumash with the Pirush the Ramban. We know the Ramban perhaps at this point more as from the Chedusha Ramban. Maybe you've had a chance already to peek once or twice at the Mulchamas in the back on the Rif, where he debates fiercely with Baal Hamar or Sugis Hashas. You'll come to discover the Ramban's Sifri Halacha. Ramban happens to be among the Rishonim, not only one of the most prolific in terms of just the number of Svarim that he wrote, but probably one of the most prolific in terms of the number of types of Svarim, the genres in which he wrote. He produced there are Rishonim who produced major Chidushim on Shas, the Rishonim who produced major Sifri Halacha, the Rishonim who wrote extensively on Nach, the Rishonim who wrote extensively on Machshava, the Rishonim who wrote poetry, the Rishonim were famous for their letters, the Rishonim were famous for their Kabbalah, the Rishonim were famous for their Perushim al HaTorah. The Ramban did all of those, wrote major, major works in all of those genres, plus the productivity of the Ramban's pen is really overwhelming. That was in addition to being really the Gadol Hadar of a Spanish Jewry, of the Sephardic community. He was the Rav of Barcelona. He was the Rav of Barcelona, 1200s. That Rabbanus was inherited afterwards by one of his Talmidim Muvhak from the Rajba. And in his Pirush al HaTorah, there's a... You get a little bit of a feel of Ramban as a whole, and you get a feel of his breadth and like looking at things from five different directions within Chumash itself. And just to capture that a little bit, and to capture a little bit of what the Ramban's type of perspective is going to add, to begin to add to our sense of perspective in learning Chumash, Ramban was not, by a long shot, the first one to write a pasuk by pasuk pirush on Chumash. Rashi, for instance, the most famous example, several generations before the Ramban. But the Ramban is, as far as I know, the first Mefarish, sort of the first major Mefarish, to have written in conjunction with a Pasuk by Pasuk Pirush, a running commentary. He also wrote Hakdamas to each of the Svarim of Chumash, which already bespeaks a certain type of broader perspective. In each of the Hakdamas, he works on figuring out what is this Sefer about? What is Sefer Shmos? If you had to put Sefer Shmos in a sentence, what's Shmos about? What's Devarim about? What's Bamidbar about? And then he consistently throughout the Sefer will work through, well, now that I've established that the major theme of Shmos is X, I've established the major theme of Bamidbar is Y, now let's figure out how each parsha fits in. And not only in terms of the safer-wide perspective, but also he'll give longer discussions of a parsha as a whole. And he's dealing with many different types of questions. He's dealing with Prat, and he's dealing with Halacha, he's dealing with Agada, sometimes he'll even deal with Kabbalah. In the introduction he says, I wrote the Kabbalah for those already initiated. If you already have a Masorah from a Rebbe on how to enter the field of a Chachmas HaNister, I'm telling you in advance, it's not going to help. To read this, don't even try. Just to give you, I want to get to a pair of very beautiful Rambans, and somewhat famous Rambans, that address questions in the Chumash, and also address larger Hashkafa questions in Parashas Noach. But just to whet your appetite a little bit, and just sort of introduce us very quickly to, no pun intended there, I see that smile. Wet with an H and wet without an H are two unrelated words. Just to whet your appetite, just to get a little bit of a sense of like what it looks like. I'm so used to learning Chumash with Rashi, all of a sudden, boom, here's a different angle. So just to briefly take a look, the way he deals with the opening pasuk, Ela told us Noach. So he deals with the question, what exactly are told us Noach? What does that word even mean? Rashi deals with also.
What is
the word? These are the toldos of Noach. The toldos of Noach mean either the descendants of Noach. So Tolos Noach means that this is the life story of Noach. And then, but I want to skip to Tzadik Tamim Haya. Take a look at the very bottom. A very, very famous Rashi. Probably one of the most famous Rashis in all of Chumash Bereishis. If you could stow the food and electronics, that would be fantastic. Bidorosav. Tzadik Haya Bidorosav. See, at the bottom of page Nun Aleph. The Miriam font, italic type font, is a Dibra Maschel. Here, Bidorosav. Yeshu Rabu Seinu, the number one. Yeshu Rabu Seinu Shadrashu Latova. Some darshan it in a positive light. Kolshkenim haya bedar shel tzadikim. If he would have been a dar of tzadikim, he would have been an even greater tzadik. Even in his dar, he was a tzadik tam. The yesha darshan lignai. And some see it as a negative. In his dar, there wasn't much competition. So, relative to the rest of his dar, he was a very impressive. As Rashi goes on to say, he says, Lashon Rashi, he's quoting Rashi. If he would have lived 10 generations later, the Dar of Avraham Avinu, Loi Nechshav L'Klum, Rashi said. It wasn't so impressive. Now, both of those approaches, which are saying opposite things about Noach, but they're both grappling with the same problem in the language of the Pesukim, which is, what do you mean, Bidorosav? He was a tzaddik, Tamim Haya, period. He was a tzaddik, he was a Tamim. And what's being added by those saying, well, he was a tzaddik, he was a Tamim, in his generation. So Rashi says, well, that's meant to imply either something even more positive, or it's meant to qualify and limit. He wasn't such a type just for his generation. Or he say, no, even his generation was such a type. Rabban says, and both of those are a little bit challenging, Rabban says there's a third way of looking at it. Hanacham ein afi apshat, says what seems to me, that those may be both additional levels of interpretation. Those are maybe both al derech drash. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Chumash to Moshe Rabbeinu and told him up front, I'm giving you a text of Chumash, Torah Shebichtav, Chumash Chumash Torah. I embedded multiple layers of meaning in every pasuk. So the Ramban says, in terms of Pshut Shamikra, it means neither that he was a tzaddik even in his generation, nor that he was a tzaddik only in his generation. But it means something else. Shehu levado hatzadik b'dor ha'sahem. He was the only tzaddik in his generation. Not only was he a tzaddik tamim, but he was the sole tzaddik tamim in his generation. A third way of looking at it. Ein b'dorosav tzaddik v'lo tamim zulaso. There was no, he was a lone voice in the desert. It was only him. And the pasuk goes on to say, O sechar ra'isi tzaddik l'fanei b'dor ha'deh. I've seen that you are a tzaddik. No one else is going to be saved but Noach. We're not saying what would have been in a different generation, neither hypothetical. We're just saying he was the sole tzaddik. Not that he was a tzaddik only in his generation, nor that he was a tzaddik in his generation. He was the only tzaddik in his generation. And then why Bedorosav? The Ramban digs even deeper. You know what's strange about Bedorosav? It should have said Bedoro. Doros is plural. In his generation. We're talking about generating. What's with the plural? Rabban says, but Alma b'dorosav. What he means to say with that, what the Chumash means to say is Doros Rabim Avru Me'esha Heshchisu. It had already been several generations since civilization had taken a nosedive. Ve'ein tzaddik ba'aretz bilto. Now, it's not that he's the only tzaddik in his generation. He's the only tzaddik over the last several generations. It had been v'haya ha'olam shamim. The world was spiritually desolate for several generations. And after a number of empty generations, here's the first tzaddik that pops up. Now he says, "Ah, you might ask me a kasha. Really, he was the only tzaddik for the last few generations? Ayiksha alecha habad de zeda neich zeda. Ayiksha alecha dvar rabosein v'misushalach. Don't be bothered by the comment that the medrash makes at misushalach. Rav Shavel tells you on the bottom." Bereishis Rabbah talks about the 7 days of avails for Misushalach HaTzadik. Apparently he too was a tzadik. How can you say there's been many generations since there was a tzadik? He says very simple. HaKasav lo yisaper rak she'ein tzadik ro'i lihinatzel min ha'mabol mikol ha'dor ha'sehim. The pasuk is saying, this is a lead up to what's about to happen. You're the first person in generations who was worthy to be saved in the face of mass extinction. In other words, Mr. Shalach, Rabban is saying, was not.
Mashiach was also a tzaddik, but not to the madrega of Noach. Noach was not only a tzaddik, but a great enough tzaddik that he could be saved even when the world is going topsy-turvy. So that's what Rabban says. It's just a flavor again of many aspects of the Rabban already. We see Bikitzer here. We see his focus on Pshat. We see the way what he did for us. He got us thinking. We have been thinking for so long, well, Pasuk means either A or B, and all of a sudden he opened our minds to another possibility. You also see that he moves very quickly and very subtly. He often won't say, oh, here's the kasha and here's the teres. It's often, in a half a line, he's implying a kasha. Another half a line, he's giving his sword. You got to read Ramban with wide open eyes. Question.
So is Darwin saying that Hashem wanted to bring a Mabel for a long time, waiting for a tzaddik big enough to save?
That's interesting. Maybe. He doesn't say that, but that's an interesting point. That may be part of what he's driving at. Yeah. Yes.
We said that the other guy was not good enough to be saved from the Mabel. It's the Mabel was being planned, but he started to pick somebody to save.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe, yeah, that's interesting that as HaKadosh Baruch Hu may want to bring him out for some time, but didn't want to extinction.
Yeah.
So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was waiting to see someone who could restart civilization. Yeah, that's a good point. A very good point. Yeah.
Wasn't almost exactly what the Puzzle said that Mr. Shalom, that he was saved because the Dars around him were so bad? That's why he was taken out?
HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want him to be killed in the Mabul, but also at the same time the Ramban is arguing that he didn't have the zchuyos that Noah had that would have warranted that he could be saved miraculously if the whole world is going down. So Kadosh Baruch Hu thought of it. Kadosh Baruch Hu held off on the Mabul so that Mr. Shach could be sort of the in-between. He didn't. In other words, if the Mabul would have come sooner, let's turn around. The Ramban is really saying, let's say the Mabul would have come sooner and Mr. Shach would have been on the Teva. What's wrong? Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to wait for the till after Mashiach dies and then bring the Mabul. What do you mean? Just let the Mabul come earlier and Mr. Shach will be on the Teva. So it works well with what you're saying. Mr. Shach wasn't, as Ramban says, on the Madrega to be saved. He was a tzaddik, but not big enough for this. So there hadn't been a tzaddik of Noah's stature in generations. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was enough of a tzaddik. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want him to be eliminated in the Mabul, but neither was he worthy of being saved. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, let's just delay the Mabul until after Mashiach passed away. I want to move on. I'd love to take more questions also. I want to move on. So how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu save Noach with a teva? Let's take a look. Moving forward from Perek, the opening Pasuk, Perek Vav, Pasuk Tes, to Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud, Tes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu at this point is giving Noach instructions about how to build the teva and how to use the teva. How to fill the teva. You're going to have to build the teva according to these blueprints, and then you're going to have to fill it. Mikol basar, mikol achai, you're going to bring in all these species. Ramban says, one second. Yadua ki achayis rabos ma'od. You and I know, from our own experience, there are innumerable species of animals. Mehen gadolos ma'od ki pilim k'ra'im zulastim. Some of them are enormous. Elephants. Re'en might be a rhinoceros or some other large animal. Haremus, aromus, ala aretz, rav ma'od. There are millions, not tens of millions, of species of insects. Gamay ofa shamayim, meaning rav ma'im la'misper. There are innumerable species of birds. Ukemo, shamu rabu seinu, gemar chulun. Towards the end of the third parak of chulun, parak elotrefus, the end talks about the dinam of which species of animals and birds and so forth are kosher, which are not. The Gemara makes a comment that when the Chumash has a list of around 20 types of non-kosher birds, so each of those is a group. Me'ev ha'esher min ha'ofos tameim yesh b'mizrach v'kulam min ayahim. One of the 20-some-odd non-ofos tameim is the ayah. The Gemara says that in the East you can find 120 different species, all which fall under the class, the family, the order, what have you, not the class, of ayah. So you think about it, that was just a non-kosher, so you think, Ramban says, do the math, an enormous number of birds. And the impression you get from the Chumash that there are many more kosher birds than non-kosher birds. So the numbers grow very, very quickly. says it's obvious from our own empirical observation. It's obvious from learning Divrei Rabbeinu that there are a staggering number of species of life on this planet. If you want every species to regenerate, so then you're going to need a pair of each. As the Chumash says, a year's worth of food for each of those species. The table is enormous, as I mentioned earlier this week. 300 amos. 300 amos, that's loosely speaking, and how long is a football field? 100 yards, right? 300 feet. So 300 amos is 1.5 to 2 times as long as that. The table was tremendous, but it was no aircraft carrier. And even an aircraft carrier is not as large as a zoo. And we're talking about a comprehensive zoo that's every species and food for a year. Rabban says the table is not nearly large enough for that. So he doesn't say V'yei Shlomar, but he says Satli Avol Hunes Hechazik Mu'adas Hamaruba. Obviously, it's a miracle. The fact that all this life could fit in the entirety of the biodiversity of the world could fit in this teva is clearly an ace. Hechazik Mu'adas Hamaruba, for something small to encompass something so large. He's using that language, presumably pointing out that there are other nisim that we know of with the same format. There are other nisim that are also hechazik mu'adas hamaruba. It's the language that Chazal used in other cases. They talk about olamdim tzafufim mishtachim mirvachim, the Jews in the Beis Hamikdash Yom Kippur. They're packed like sardines, but when it came time to be mishtachim, all of a sudden everyone has space around them. Or the fact that there were times over the course of Chumash when all the Jews gather Pesach or Amor. Rashi comments hechazik mu'adas hamaruba. But then he says, one second, if it's a nace anyways, why have to be so big? If it's a nace, it's a nace. So make a matchbox and let everyone fit everyone in. And just practically speaking, in other words, the engineering difficulties, the challenges in building a 300 amma long teva, for what? Anyways, it's going to be an ace. So just build a regularly sized boat, and I'll make an ace there. Yeah, Eitan, what do you say?
Was it meant to be a long and strenuous process
to
see what's going on?
Oh, Gevaldik. Yeah, very good, very good. We'll come back to that moment. Amazing. Oh, so Ramban gives two answers. That's his first answer. Ro Hashem Yisbarach la'asosam gedola, k'dei shiru osa b'nei daro. The point was, this was advertising. HaKadosh Baruch was advertising that the Mabul is coming. HaKadosh Baruch was advertising do tshuva now. He wanted people to see it. He wanted the spectacle. The Yismu, people will wonder, what on earth is Noach building? That's enormous. Who builds such a big boat? For what? To what end? The Yisabru, they'll talk about it. The Yisabru, you're not Mabul. The Kinas HaBehem HaChayim HaOfosocha. HaKadosh Baruch was trying to create buzz. Ramban doesn't use the terminology, but essentially the same. Kadosh Baruch wants to create buzz around the coming marvel. The fact that we're fitting all the entirety of life into this marvel, ula yasu tshuva. This is for real. So that's number one. That you're right, that highlights that there often will be multiple purposes to a particular event. That can even be true for human beings, and it's certainly true for Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted Noach to build a teva in order to save himself and his family and the animal kingdom. Kadosh Baruch Hu also wanted Noach to build a teva and to be machzer people b'tshuva. Kadosh Baruch Hu was not, which A speaks to the chesed of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu was trying to give us more chances, more opportunity to tshuva. Kadosh Baruch Hu delays things by over a century. Ulai yasu tshuva, that language Ramban. You know, it wasn't so likely, and indeed they didn't. Kadosh Baruch Hu is trying, Erech HaTayim is trying to cut us more slack and cut us more slack and more opportunity to do tshuva. It speaks to the chesed habore, and it speaks to the multifacetedness of different events. and to realize why did this happen, or why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want this to happen, or what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want me to accomplish with this mitzvah, there often is more than one great answer to that question. There could be many different goals that are being accomplished, as you see over here. Yeah, question.
The mitzvah are already fitting in. Didn't that happen at the last second, pretty much, whenever he was actually boarding? So people shouldn't do shiva. That didn't happen during the whole process of building it, that everybody would see it happen.
Correct. But everyone was asking, like, imagine your house. And imagine a 500-foot-long structure that you're building behind your house. It's hard to even imagine. A typical suburban lot is around 50 feet wide. So 10 houses. Right? So you have a house. Noah's house is probably, I don't know, typical size for the time. And then he has this like enormous thing going on in the backyard. Tremendous. Overwhelming. So people are talking, Noah, what are you doing? What on earth is this? And people are talking about, oh, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he's going to bring a marble, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Noah that he's going to have to, why is it so big? Because they're going to have to get all the chayv, the yof, etc. into the... Before it actually happened, there was a visual that was advertising, here's what's going to happen.
But that part's not the though. You see a huge structure. Okay, it's not going
to
fit everything.
No, Nechami. Ramban is saying, you're right, whether the teva is 15 feet long or 500 feet long, either way, there's a nes involved in fitting everyone in. So why is the Kaddish Baruch Hu matriach Noah to build something so large? Because for the public relations, for the advertising. Kaddish Baruch Hu wanted to get the message out. Noah was building a little 25-foot boat in the backyard. That's not very impressive. That's not going to create a lot of buzz. If you do something, if a 500-foot boat in the backyard, that's creating a massive amount of buzz. Or the Ramban says another pshat. Maybe something more fundamental about Nisan. Va'od asu osa gedola l'ma'eg b'neis. This is something else. Which is that maybe the reason why Kaddish Baruch Hu tells them build it 300 amos long is because Kaddish Baruch Hu wanted to minimize the miracle. That's an interesting point. Does Kaddish Baruch Hu want to minimize the miracle? Ki chein haderech b'chol nisim shebetar b'nevim. He says if you look throughout the Tanakh at stories of miracles that happen throughout the Tanakh, you'll see a consistent pattern. That's the derech. That's the pattern. La'asosa masha biyad adam la'asos. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu will want humans to do as much as they can. Hashar yeh b'yidei adam. And the rest will be... It's hashar yeh b'yidei shamayim. And the rest will be done by the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a powerful idea. And there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu... Well, what's Ramban saying? This is the idea that Ramban picks up on several other places. And it's an idea that the Rambam speaks about. The Rambam formulates very sharply in one of the letters that belief in the first of the Animamins, belief that there's a God who created the entire universe, is logically equivalent to believing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do any nes that he wants. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the entire universe, not only all the things in the universe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the system by which the universe operates. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created time and space. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created mathematics and physics and chemistry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a whole system and created all the stuff that works by that system. So obviously, those are all creatures. HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't bound by any of that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gravity works because Ribbono Shel Olam made it so. So of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu can change that at will. It's all... Science itself is a creature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rambam and Ramban both write, of course, any nes is possible. God can do whatever he wants. But the question is, what does he choose to do? So as Ramban says, Bekitzer here and at greater length elsewhere, we see by looking at the Tanakh, which is one of the major purposes of the Tanakh, is to give us a little bit of a sense of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates. So you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu generally tries to keep things as natural as possible. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have chosen to create a totally random universe with no laws and no predictability, and he didn't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to create mathematics and physics and chemistry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to create a mathematical universe. Mathematics, in a certain sense, is the study of patterns. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose, and it's a remarkable the extent to which discoveries in the most abstruse, abstract areas of mathematics within a couple of decades typically find practical applications, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to create a highly mathematical universe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose, he didn't have to create a very patterned, rhythmic universe. Sophisticated patterns, but once you find them, a patterned, rhythmic universe. That was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision. Why? You could guess why, but it's a fact. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants as much as possible that Olam Kimin Hago Noeg, that the universe should operate by the rules that he had originally, the rules of physics and chemistry that he had originally created. Everyone, by God's choice, Nisim are rare. And not only Nisim rare, the Rabban is saying, not only quantitatively, Nisim don't happen often, but even qualitatively, when Nisim do happen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu even then tries to keep it as, reduce the miraculousness of it as much as possible. He'll have people do as much as possible. Remember the story of the Almana and Sefer Melachim. And she comes to
Elisha,
right? And she says, my husband was taken, my husband is gone, and the debts are overwhelming, and the creditors are going to take my children, Rachman Al-Tzlan. I need money. So Elisha just said, there you go, here's money. Or he could have said, go home and you'll find that there's a barrel of oil in your house. But no. What Elisha does, he says, go home, go to all the neighbors, borrow containers. You have what do you have in the house? You have one container of oil. Start pouring, and it's going to fill all those containers. There was clearly a nes nigla, a violation of conservation of matter. But at the same time, it wasn't yesh me'ayin, it was yesh me'ayin. There already was some oil, and that oil grew. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing a nes nigla, but kept it as natural as possible, and, as Ramban stresses, as much human involvement as possible. That's a powerful yisod that we'll see more of as we continue in Mesil Sesharim. Also, the design of Olam HaZeh Bechlal speaks to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be active participants in crafting our spiritual destiny, not just to passively receive goodness from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but to actively be Omer B'Nisayon and create who we are. So you're seeing that last night in a Tehillim Shir and Shul, we spoke about over the course of Perek Tzadi Aleph, Yoshua B'Seisra Elyon, you see the growth of a Boteach from being someone just sort of passively taken care of by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a person who's actively creating and driving and positioning himself to be in the care of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you see that thread coming out here as well. So there's a lot going on this way, just a few lines of Rabban, in addressing, just to stop for a moment and consider what just happened, and then we'll, after recapping, we'll wrap up with a peek at one other Rabban later in the parasha that reflects some of these ideas. Just to consider what just happened, the Rabban asked a simple and powerful kasha on the psukim. What's going on? Kasha we may never have thought about before. And it led to l'chora, the obvious answer, it's an ace. Unless there are, you can see if the other Rishonim have other approaches. But that was a lead up, that was just a setup to the follow up kasha. Well, if it's an ace anyways, mimanoshach, nishtahi nishtahar. You're not building it big enough for it to be natural. And you're not building it as small as it could be if it was going to be miraculous. And that led the Ramban to two different Teirutzim in Parshanut, in understanding the Psukim, which also led us to larger ideas. Either the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is seeking to accomplish something else with his mitzvah of building the table also in Horashah, namely the chesed for the B'nai Doro Shel Noach, gives another chance, a very dramatic chance. Noach spent 120 years of his life, in other words, seeking unsuccessfully to be machzer everyone else b'tshuva. This whole construction project had that other layer as well, the multiple teleologies, multiple purposes, or the yisod about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs his world, and the interplay of Nes and Teva. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do Nisim all the time if he wants to, but chose to rarely do Nisim, and furthermore, even when he does Nisim, chose to minimize him as much as possible. So it's somewhat less miraculous if you at least build something tremendous, enormous, an enormous vessel Still, it's gonna you can take a need a nace to fit everyone, but at least it's tremendous as opposed to fitting all of the biodiversity of the planet onto a 25-foot motorboat. Now, the question of nace and teva comes up later in the parasha also. So let's take a little bit of a peek at the beginning of the Ramban, Perek Tes, the last page in your packet, Perek Tes, Pasuk Yud Beis. Now we're post-Mabel. We're post-Mabel. Noah has emerged, and he's shocked by a devastated world. And there are a lot of pieces going on there in terms of how Noah reacts positively, negatively, the karbanos, the drunkenness. Part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reaction is he communicates with Noach. He gives Noach nevuah, apparently. He tells Noach, it's not going to happen again. It's shattering. It's shattering right now. It's traumatizing. But also, why and how am I going to rebuild civilization if this could happen again? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm making a bris with you, this doesn't happen again. There will never again be this sort of mass extinction of humanity. Then he says, and the os bris, zos os habris, here you are, page Samach Dalet, Perek Tes Pasuk Yud Beis, zos os habris asher anino, saying, here is the sign of the bris, which I am placing, what is it? The rainbow. Rabban says, so let's think about this a little bit. Let's stop and think. We've known about this since we were children, but let's stop and analyze. Mimashram in ha'os hazeh, if you're telling me that it was the sign of the bris, sounds like shlo haya keshes be'anan b'maisa b'reishis. That this keshes be'anan, the rainbow in the clouds, was something new. It had not existed up until that point. It had not been part of the original Bria. B'yata, second line, bara Hashem chadasha, bara Hashem create something new. Lasos keshes b'ashamayim b'yamanan. And sometimes there'll be a rainbow in the skies on a cloudy, on a humid day, on a rainy day. The Amru b'tamos, so okay, that's step number one. Now, if this is a new Bria, so there are a couple of questions we could ask. One question is, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating something just to be an os for this bris, so what would you expect that os, but what qualities would you expect that os to have? Maybe no rain. Okay, it does come in conjunction with the rain, which is interesting. Good. And as you're saying, it should communicate. So rain around the time of rain seems like the right time for this os to appear. You would also expect that the os, right, if you're communicating something, you want to communicate clearly. How does this os show anything? It just seems random. You'll see colors and they'll remind you of the bris. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created an os just for this bris. Why do you create something that clearly communicates the message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to spare us? So he doesn't articulate that kasha. That's an unspoken kasha that he seems to be addressing right now. The Amru B'tama O'Sazeh, they, earlier Mefarshim, suggest that the meaning, the perish of this O's, how does the rainbow convey the message? We don't associate bows with shooting. We associate guns with shooting. But once upon a time, a bow was what a soldier would use to shoot. And which way does it point? So this time it points up. It doesn't point down. And it symbolizes Zohar HaKadosh Baruch Hu is shooting at us, so to speak. Asol hefech mizah. Kadosh Baruch Hu turns it around. It's like the safe way to hand a knife to someone. One of the safe ways is that the giver holds the blade and hands it handle first. That's a safety measure at times, and also it's a way of communicating clearly. I'm not trying to hurt you. Supposedly, you gotta investigate with qualified historians. Supposedly, the handshake evolved from was originally a way of showing the person that you're meeting that you have no weapons in your hands. So that's what is along those lines. Kadosh Baruch Hu turns his gun around. He turns his bow around. The bow is pointing upwards. He's holding it backwards, so to speak, to show shelo yorubon meshamayim. V'chei zed v'chein derech hamilchamim. If a warrior wants to show that he comes in peace, you're going to either put your weapons down or reverse your weapons to symbolize that you don't, you know, I'm not shooting. I'm not shooting, I'm not stabbing, I come in peace. And then he says another significance of the messaging of the bow, she'ein la keshes yeser, l'chonein chitzim alav. In order for a bow to shoot, for a gun to shoot, there are several steps that need to be happen in order for the gun to be ready to shoot. For a bow to shoot, the first thing it needs is a bowstring. So if you see a bow that's A, turned around, and B, not only is not loaded with arrows, doesn't even have a string on it, so that also that's a way of showing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not, so to speak, does not plan to shoot. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not plan to bring that sort of destruction upon the planet again. Then there's another kasha, another implied kasha. You're telling me that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you read the Chumash, you're saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the rainbow as an Oz Bris. So he says, number one, so why HaKadosh Baruch Hu create this particular, how does it show? But number two, Anachnu al karchenu na'amin l'divrei ha'yavanim, Rabban says, we must believe the Greek scientists, apparently this was around long before Newton, shemilahat ha'shemesh ba'avir halach yiyeh ha'keshes. It's sun rays of the sun coming through moist air produce a rainbow bitolada as a natural scientific result. And how? And why do I have to believe the Greek scientists? Not based on authority, but the Ramban was attuned to scientific method. Because again, Newton did this a couple of centuries later with a glass prism. Apparently, the experiment was already around. You take a glass, you fill it with water. You can synthesize your own rainbow.
Is there something symbolic about the light being divided into its base colors?
Maybe. So he goes on to say, the truth is, if you look in the psukim, I don't want to hold you on, be sensitive to time. He says, if you look in the psukim, you'll notice that Nosati versus Asher Anino saying, you see, Ramban said, if you read the psukim carefully, Ramban was clearly not scared of science, and he was certainly attuned to scientific method. And he says, if you actually look in the psukim, you'll see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I already created a keshes, now I'm giving it to you as an Os HaBris. And Ramban says, not only do I see that from my appreciation of scientific method and from careful reading of these psukim, but also from learning, from knowledge of the rest of Tanakh, it's often the case when you have a bris, you give a pre-existing item to symbolize a promise. Avraham Avinu was making a bris with another head of state. He gives him a set of animals as the bris. The animals existed before, and Avram didn't create the animals, but I'm giving you these pre-existing animals as a sign, as a symbol of the bris. So that's what the Ramban says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had created the optics were there beforehand. The humidity was there beforehand. Rainbows may have been there beforehand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to know, but now that rainbow will have added significance. The rainbow that had Nasati, Shanasati Be'anon, the rainbow that I already created, will now, from this point on, convey the message of this verse.